stop on this train will be...
It's up to you, New York.
Swung on and hit in the air. Sydney Center. Fetch back. Away back. Yeah. She is gone.
New York.
Hey.
Uh-huh.
I'm beat down the
train. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for riding with MTA New York City Transit.
This is 161st Street, Yankee Stadium.
Now batting for the Yankees, number 2, Derek Jeter. Number 2.
Alrighty then.
All right. Welcome
what
to
What is up?
Welcome to the 18th episode of 161st Street Podcast. Jeter is in the Hall of Fame. That did happen. He is not unanimous, which we'll get into that and why that guy is that guy, why he has to be that asshole, and if it really fucking matters. What do you think here, Durfee?
So I know that everyone's pretty upset about it. Obviously, the guy is a jabroni for not picking Jeter. Like, how do you think anybody... I want to know who else he put on the ballot, first of all. That's the first question I have. But really, when it comes down to it, I'm not starting a riot to go burn this guy's house down. Like, it is what it is. If Jeter doesn't really care that much, I don't really care that much. We all know that he deserved to be unanimous. He you know, he did deserve it. And we can bitch and moan all we want about it. But at the end of the day, Jeter isn't worried about it. I'm not too worried about it.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point there, Murph, because, like, I was the same way. I was like, first I was like, who the hell didn't vote him in unanimously? But then... you also said, you know, who else did that guy vote for? And I think that's a good point, because you never know if some other vote, he allocated some other vote to someone else to give them a better chance in the future. Maybe even that vote was for Larry Walker, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, either way, Jeter was going to get in, and he is a Hall of Famer for his ballot and the best shortstop of all time. So we can appreciate that. And if he's not unanimous, it's like, I'm over it.
Yeah, I don't really even, to be honest, give a shit about the unanimous thing, because... I think the writers are more fixated on the unanimous thing because of the fact that Griffey and Cal didn't get in unanimously.
Well, nobody has.
Nobody has, other than Mo, I'm just saying.
The position players,
They always reference back to, and even Dan does this too, he says, like, yo, Cal or Griffey didn't get in, so why should Jeter? I was like, that's because they made a mistake on that. Griffey should have been unanimous.
Yeah.
If you're talking unanimous, like, unanimous to me is like, yeah, like, Jeter should be in the Hall of Fame. Like, everybody knows that. Like, and people, I feel like, are spiteful. And, like, that one guy may have not voted Jeter in because he knew Griffey never got in. So he wanted to make sure that he wasn't unanimous because of the Griffey situation.
Yeah.
I think that...
Go
ahead, Damon.
So I was just going to quickly say, like, I had a conversation with this with one of my other friends from work, and he was like, Mariano Rivera was, like, the best reliever of all time. He is on top. He is, like, he is number one, right? And that's what unanimous really means. It's like he was during his prime, the 7-year prime or 8-year prime, he was the best reliever of all time, right? And I try to think about it, like, I'm trying to think of other scenarios where it'd be like, you're, for instance, Cal Ripken and Jeter, like, if you're comparing the two, like, is there really one that's, like, significantly better than the other one that makes them more unanimous than the other? And I just kept thinking about that, you know. It's like, unanimous is really the best of all time at that one position.
I agree. And I think that just the beauty of the Baseball Hall of Fame is that there hasn't, in, you know, over 100 years, like, nobody has been unanimous into the Hall of Fame. Babe Ruth wasn't unanimous in the Hall of Fame. Lou Gehrig wasn't unanimous in the Hall of Fame. You know, Mickey Mantle wasn't unanimous in the Hall of Fame. Willie Mays wasn't unanimous. Like, all these huge players were not unanimous. Granted, the voting was different at the time, but just how... difficult that is to get in. The fact that he still even had the highest votes is, I think, a really big deal.
I think it's just funny that it was one person.
That's just the funny part. Just like, yeah, of course. But, like, I don't think that there should be a unanimous guy until you see somebody win, like, multiple triple crowns or like, you know, 15 years of gold gloves. Like, somebody who's, like, the undisputed greatest of all time, either at the position or as a position player as a whole, like Mo was with the reliever. So he definitely deserved it. But if, you know, is Jeter ultimately the best baseball player of all time? No.
I agree, but yeah. I think unanimous to me, I get like the dominating their position. Everybody says Mo is unanimous because he flat out dominated his position more than anybody ever did. So that I get for making him not unanimous. I think it's more of the fact that they're all salty about the Griffey shit.
Yeah.
So why don't we, he's a Yankee, you know.
Yeah, that too. There's also Yankee haters out there. So, I mean, why don't we hop into another person's opinion on this? We can go to good old OJ, see what he has to say about this. When we play that clip there, Murphy.
Who wouldn't vote for Derek Jeter for Baseball Hall of Fame? This man has been a credit to the game. He's been a credit to sports. He's had a hell of a career. I mean, seriously, take that guy's vote away from him. He should never be able to vote again. He's probably from Boston, but even Boston people appreciate good baseball. I'm just saying, get rid of that guy. Take care.
That's the most ridiculous statement I've ever heard in my entire life.
Yeah, but I mean, as nuts as OJ is, he kind of has a little bit of a point. Just, I mean, like, do you think, and I don't mean that. I mean, like, do you think he loses his, a lot of people were saying, get that guy to lose his vote. What do you think on that?
I'd hate to agree with OJ
about anything.
No, no, I mean,
but like,
yeah.
I don't know. Like, you shouldn't. The point of having a vote is that you're a baseball ready and your opinion's trusted. The whole system's kind of broken if you have one bad vote and you're like, you lose your vote. Like, I don't know. That seems extreme to me, but yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, and I feel like, again, we keep going back to the same thing as, like, you don't know what his whole bout looked like. You don't know the contributions that he made for future players, you know? It's like, I don't know. That's all I got to say about all that.
One thing about the whole voting thing, again, I think, like we said, I think it's a little bit broken because, like, there's that, like, strategy that voters can have where they can literally – because they have 10 votes.
Right.
So every player, you know, they have to meet that minimum 5% to stay on the ballot next year. And some people don't get there. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the voters will use their 10 votes, or I don't know if it's a lot of voters, but I know that that's a strategy people talk about, that some they'll cast their 10 votes to guys like
Josh Beckett
or Raul Ibanez or somebody who they want to keep on the ballot, which I don't know how much that matters because if they got...
I think it matters a lot,
No, but if they're under 5%, are they really going to double and triple their... I mean, you saw it with Larry Walker. Larry Walker had like...
That was less how many years half. Has he been on the ballot? Like he's been
that
on
was
the
this was last year. Year. It was his 10th year.
9 years. Yeah, it was 10th year.
So I just don't really like that strategy. That and I know it exists. I just think
that, that. Well, the thing is, it depends how strong the Hall of Fame class is. Because you think about it, you only get 10 votes, right? So Larry Walker's first year on the ballot, I don't know off the top of my head who got in that year, but there could have been, you know, 5-6 guys that got in that year. So that takes away votes from him. So then maybe he was down close to that 5 point at that point. Because he obviously wasn't a first ballot guy. I like it, actually. I'm going to disagree with you on that. I think that the way it is, the way it's so hard to get in at all, and then how it's nearly impossible to get unanimous, I think is perfect. Because I think once one person goes unanimous, I think we're going to see more and more people start to get unanimous. And I don't know if I'd like that, because then you're seeing guys who are...
I don't know, because it's like... I don't know, because, like, think about, like, the benchmark that creates. So, like, for instance, let's say Mike Trout just... make an example of the greatest player that I've seen in my life.
Sure.
Let's say he's the first unanimous. Then, like, going forward, you have to say that in order for someone else to be unanimous, they have to be as good or better than Mike Trout.
Right.
And that's saying a lot, you know?
I think with this Jeter thing, too, I don't think a lot of people are going to be unanimous now, because now that maybe that would have been the case had Jeter gotten in.
That's what I'm referring to, yeah.
Okay, so now that he didn't get unanimous, the gold standard is now Mo and everything below that. So like
for pitchers, yeah.
Well, for unanimous, so you have to dominate a position like that. So now that Jeter and Griffey both didn't get in unanimously, the unanimous name is sacred still, I'm saying.
Yeah. Like it like that. Like I like that it's a seemingly like unattainable
impossible thing.
But then when somebody does it great. Do I wish Jeter was the one that first cracked it? Do I wish that the Yankees had the two only unanimous people ever? Of course. But
do you think Trout's gonna be that guy?
I don't know.
I think there's always going to be that guy saying, like, let's say he doesn't win any championships, he's going to have that qualm about him.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's one writer is going to be like, no, he didn't win.
I just think that, like, for right now, we're thinking first ballot Hall of Famer is, like, it's, like, the top honor. Like, unanimous wasn't even a thought, really, for most players. So, like, now it's starting to become, there's a new like level of how good you can be as a Hall of Famer. Like it used to be like first ballot's the best you can do, and now it's like we're getting so close to these unanimous guys, like Griffey was, like getting close.
Yeah.
Where it's like, well, now the new highest tier is the unanimous Hall of Famer, and it's gonna start becoming like
being like first ballot Hall of Famer. It's like a second Hall of Fame. Once we
get a couple people doing it, and like, I don't know if I'm here for that. I don't know.
I don't like it. I mean, even Jeter handled it perfectly. He said, I'm in the Hall of Fame. This is the highest honor. I don't care about that one vote. And after he said that, I mean, obviously everybody was up in arms. I was one of the people tweeting, like, I want to be the angry mob, go find the guy. But now I really don't give a fuck. Like, I mean, Jeter handled it, perfectly.
It's how Jeter handled it. If Jeter was pissed, we'd all be rallying behind him. But, like, he's not. If he was like, fuck that guy, find him for me,
Twitter, I'd be on. I'd be like, yeah, I got you, Jeet. But speaking of the way he handled the media, I think the one guy who asked him that really fucking stupid question on his day, I'll play the clip. I have it recorded, so this guy, I'll just play the clip. That's it.
For all the success you had in two decades as a player and as a teammate, does it make it all the more frustrating what you're going through in Miami with the losing and the empty ballpark? And where would a title as CEO with the Marlins fit in alongside for you the accomplishments with the Yankees and reaching the Hall?
No, it's been a lot of fun down there losing it.
I think that, I mean, number one, he handled it absolutely beautifully because, I mean, just, he joked about it. Everybody laughed after that. But, like, why do you ask that question on a day that guy should be fired. Yeah, I mean, that's a day that's, it's his day. You're talking about his achievements, not, you've been losing a lot in Miami. How's that?
Yeah. I'd like to know what outlet this guy's working for, because, like, it just to come in at that Miami Marlins angle, like, he was probably, like, I'm totally speculating. Like, he could have been for the Post for all I know, but, like, I feel like he was probably from some, like, Miami kind of small-time paper and was trying to get a little spin on his story where he talked about Miami Marlins or something, but he was kind of almost trying to stump Jeter on it, I think, and get him to say some kind of like easily quotable line, and Jeter just did the perfect job of taking that and making it an easy quotable line.
Yeah.
But in like Jeter's taking this lately, and he's, you know,
well, because after that he went on to I don't have that clip recorded, but he went on to say good things and say we took on a tough task in Miami, all that stuff. And I mean, it's just Jeter being Jeter, handling the media perfectly, and I just you got to believe that guy literally sat down in his room before going in his hotel room, but before he went to the press conference, and was like, this is the best question I have. Like, I am going to ask Jeter this question.
This is the one.
He looked in the mirror, he's like, yep, he's going to love it.
This is
like,
it.
Like, if you're going to talk to Derek Jeter, if I'm talking to Derek Jeter, I'm not saying that. I'm bringing in my number one question, so you got to believe that guy thought this was gold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is clearly not.
Yeah. And, yeah, and I guess, yeah, it's ridiculous. But I think the last thing I want to say about the whole this Hall of Fame class is that I want to give a shout out to Larry Walker because he deserved, the Hall of Fame.
Did you see the SpongeBob shirt?
What?
You see his SpongeBob shirt?
Yeah, I mean, the guy, like 5-time All-Star MVP, like 7 Gold Gloves, like Silver Slugger, batting champion, home run leader. Like, the guy should have been a lot earlier.
Average. He's the epitome of it. Like,
he had a 315 career batting average, too. Like, this guy was actually so far good. I don't know why.
He was amazing. And, like, it's just, like, he was the most underrated. I mean, you can't – that guy should not be getting in the 10th ballot. That's all I'm saying.
In the final hour.
But, yeah, but I'm super happy he did, and shout out to him because he definitely deserves it.
Yeah, and a lot of people were also thinking, like, yo, I wish Larry Walker didn't get in because that would be Jeter's day, him alone. Like, that is the most disrespectful thing I've ever heard in my life. Like, fuck,
they're not baseball fans. They just want to, like, that's just the most ridiculous statement.
Yeah.
So, when I saw who got in, like, I was just walking by my TV and I was, you know, making some dinner with my roommate or lunch or whatever. And I walked in and it didn't show who got in necessarily. It showed the top 5 vote getters. And before I read the headline, I thought, like, those were the 5 that got in. So I saw Ken Jeter, Griffey. Larry Walker. Jeter, Larry Walker. And then it was Curt Schilling and then Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. And I was like, holy shit, Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens got in. So I was like, kind of running around freaking out. And then I was like, yeah. And then I ran back in. And then it, like, had after the fact had highlighted Jeter and Larry Walker as the two they got in. So I was kind of disappointed.
But so like, with that being said, though, do you think we might see
they were close
in the following? They had 60, a little over 60% each.
They were close.
And they're the two headliners of the steroid era. So that's
they're only getting more and more votes. I don't know how many years they have left, though.
I don't. It's not. I think they're not.
They both have two more.
What do you? My question to you guys is: do you think the steroid guys should get in? Will they ever get in? Like, I honestly, in my opinion, I think that because I don't think Barry Bonds has come out and said anything yet. Like, hey, I cheated. You know, like A-Rod is open about
technically,
it.
He's never tested positive for anything. Technically.
So I think what he needs to do is, I think, to me, in my opinion, if he were to come out and say, like, yes, I apologize, make it whatever, a public apology, but I think that would get that, because he's already getting 61% of the votes. That might get the extra 15.
I thought it was higher than that. Was it 60?
I don't know.
It was 60.4.
Yeah.
I don't think that's really going to do anything, to be honest. I don't think, like, I think it's way too late for that. You know, like A-Rod did that during the season. Then he came back and played again. Like so he was still, like, he was still playing.
Do we think A-Rod gets in?
I think of all of them. No, I retract that. I was going to say of all of them, A-Rod would be the guy to get in. But I think Barry Bonds,
you can't.
I even tweeted out and I wanted to stir the pot a little bit. I didn't. I believe it. I think he should be in the Hall of Fame personally, in my opinion.
I do too.
And because I mean, steroids are not, you played during a time that everybody did steroids, whether they got caught or not. So the competition level is there. Steroids are not. You give me steroids, I'm not getting seven MVPs. MVPs is the unheard of. The next most MVPs is three, and that's Mike Trout.
You know how many guys were juicing up in double A ball like, during the 1990s, like their whole roster, they were passing them out like sunflower seeds in a locker room.
A-Rod was taking gummies, like let alone everybody, like even guys like D. Gordon were doing steroids. That was in 2014. But I mean,
you only get in trouble when it actually works.
Yeah, he did it in 2014. It was way outside the steroid era, which means like if guys like D. Gordon are doing that, then everybody and their mother was doing it in the steroid era.
Was D. Gordon steroids though? Or was it just PED? I don't know if it was like steroids.
I don't know. They have an
MLB, I don't know. I'm not a scientist. I don't know the difference.
They have an MLB The Show card, and he's at the 2014 D. Gordon, and that specific D. Gordon, and that's his steroid card, and it's nasty. But what do you think?
Here's my take on that. I think that either Clemens or Bonds will get in on their final year of the ballot. That's my full prediction. Not both. I think one of them will get in. And I think it's going to be Bonds.
One of them.
I think one of them on their final year of the ballot. I don't think both of them will.
I feel like I can picture, because their numbers are always so similar every year, and I feel like it's the same 60% of writers. Like, I feel like the guys that vote for Bonds in are also voting for Clemens in, and vice versa. Like, I literally think they're the exact same guys.
Do you think that, like, hypothetically, do you think that on their final year, and they're the only two that would be able to get in, do you think that the writers would have a Hall of Fame class that is just steroid users?
See, and no, that's true. Because it also, it depends how
that's
strong
my thought.
The Hall of Fame class is. That would
be kind of crazy.
Like, imagine the two Hall of Famers to get in are Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds. There would be
and then it's like the steroid
baseball
class.
That would go down as like a,
I'm gonna pick up this clip in 2 years and I'm gonna post it.
Yeah, right.
I know when it happens.
So here's the thing: I was looking up the Bonds and Clemens voting percentage and over the years and see if they increase or decrease over time. They've honestly been kind of sitting at the same. So I'll go back to 2017 and I'll count up. So in 2017, they got Clemens got 54.1 and Bonds was below him at 53.8. Then
what year is this?
That was 2017. This is 2018 now. 2018, Clemens at 57.4, and then Bonds at 56.4. So they're moving together. And then Clemens again in 19 moved up a little, 2% more to 59.5, and then Bonds 59.1. And then 2020 now, they got 60.7 for Bonds, and Clemens got 61 on the dot. So they're moving slowly, but it's not anything with Larry Walker. Larry Walker went from last year he got 54.6, and this year he got 76.6, and the year before that in 18.
Wait,
what? So Larry Walker,
Walker
wasn't even in the top 10
in
2018. And so the lowest of the top 10 was Omar Vizquel.
People really think about it more when it's the last year on the ballot. And that's what I was talking about with when we were talking back about Jeter and how Larry Walker like gets it like that. That's why it matters, the 5% thing, because I'm sure Larry Walker was somewhere mm-hmm. under 20% in like his third or fourth year.
Yeah, in 18 he literally wasn't on the top 10 list, and the Omar Vizquel is 10 and he's at 37, so he's below 37 on this. Then he went to second to last year, he goes to 54.6 and then 76.6. So that's a jump. But in terms of the steroid guys, they've been sitting at exactly the same around, but gaining like 2% every year. So the guys who are steroid, four pro steroid Hall of Fame inductees, they're kind of not, they're all the same. Like they're not, like not any new guys for the most part are like changing their minds, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't see them. I don't know how many more years of eligibility they have, but I can look back and going back to.
I think whatever
they're not on. The, no oh, matter, they're on that too.
No matter how many years they have, I think once they get to that final year, if they don't get in before that, you're going to see that spike. That maybe not to the extent that Larry Walker had it, but you're going to see that, you know, that last year, like, hey, like, you know, I think they're going to. That's going to be
yeah.
their highest, whether they get
and
in or not.
And I feel like the people who like are on the ballot right now who got votes, like. The ones below Bonds and, you know, Clemens, like, I don't really know if any of them are really, like, standout definites anyway, you know? Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, if there's someone who comes on the ballot, you know, in the next 2 years, that's really going to be, like, get those votes up. Like, I don't know. I feel like it's a good chance it comes in the next year or two.
Yeah, and this was their, I just counted, this was their eighth year on the ballot, so they have two left.
So, yeah, and yeah I think I said that before.
At this rate... I mean, we did see a huge increase because everybody knows it's their last couple of years, but at this rate, it doesn't look like they'll get in. But if voters do take into consideration their final years, that then I think, I mean, we'll have a verdict in the next 2 years.
Yeah,
so,
it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, yeah that's a nice, sure. interesting to see. But that's enough of that, so.
Alrighty then.
That was enough talking about other teams. This is a Yankees podcast. So in other news... what else we got here? Oh, so let's still talk about Jeter a little bit. What's our? Because I mean, why not? Because it's his week. So
he deserves it. He deserves it.
So we grew up watching Jeter. We're not exactly. We're 22, so we don't know a lot. We haven't watched.
We weren't alive in '96
and all that stuff. So take that with a grain of salt when you're listening to our favorite Jeter moments, because that's what we're gonna get into next. So Murphy, what's your favorite Jeter moment?
So. My favorite one that I remember watching, like, kind of remember where I was his 3,000th hit in the home run. But just, I watched the highlight of the flip.
Yeah.
Like, 100 times before I turned the age of 15. Like, I don't know. So, to me, that's Jeter's best moment, but the one that I remember the most is the 3,000th hit.
Yeah, and a lot of people, the flip was unbelievable, and it's also because it's what kept them in the playoffs. Like, without that, then...
Was it 2000...
I'm not exactly sure, but like without the flip, then Mr. November doesn't happen.
Right,
it's the walk off because that's why the flip is so important. But again, for me, my favorite Jeter moment is mainly because and obviously people are going to be up in arms about this. But and honestly, I think I posted it. I think it was the best one. His walk off in his final game as a Yankee in Yankee Stadium in classic Jeter fashion, single slaps it inside out to right field, like. That I thought that was just like that just like just is everything Jeter has done his entire career. Last it's just storybook. I think that's my favorite Jeter moment because I've seen it and not only just because I was alive for it, but also because it was fucking sick. Like what do you think, Damon?
Well, first going back to the flip, I don't know, you probably definitely saw the him going over the flip in the at the MLB studio. You see that he was like doing a breakdown of what his thought process of the flip. It was so cool, but like that just goes to show like it's just like textbook shortstop mentality, and it was just so cool to see him do a full breakdown of it. If you haven't seen it yet, go watch it. But yeah, I know I kind of agree with you, Rella, about favorite Jeter moment, just because it was, you know, it was the time when like I remember what happened. Like the Yankees were down, I think, that game, and I was like counting the number of outs we had left and the number of hits and like people on base we had to get in order for Jeter to get up again, because I was like, this can't be like his last at bat. Like he needs to do this. And I remember the Yankees went down, and I was like, ah, whatever. So I'm like, I think I went to get like food or something, and I heard that he was up again. So like, I was driving around town, and I tried to like go into like some bar, and I saw it through the window of the bar, and it was the coolest moment ever. Like, I saw him do it, like the whole place erupted. I was like jumping and crying, and it was so cool. But so
you're probably like 17 years old at this bar.
No, but that's awesome. But I was asking Kev too what his favorite Jeter moment was, we got in that conversation that he started telling me a story about, like, because he was actually supposed to be there for the 3,000th hit, but he had the tickets available to him, but he didn't go because he didn't think Jeter would do it because he needed 4 hits that day.
Yeah.
So
I didn't watch the first half of the game. I found out like on Twitter or something. It was probably even Facebook. It says 2014 that he had 3 hits and that he needed the one more. And then I tuned in and watched the home run.
All right. So here's my thought on that too. So, like, I get the home run being the 3,000th hit is fucking awesome, but like, that's all right. I'm gonna preface this by saying, like, in terms of sports being fixed, which obviously I'm not on that train, but it's like I'm saying it looks so storybook that it seems fixed to some people. Obviously, it's not.
It's just sports, man.
But yeah, I know it's just sports. It's crazy, but I feel like the home run thing on your 3,000th isn't as fixed as everybody's thinking. Like the people that are on that train, because if you're going for 3,000, I'm swinging as hard as I fucking can to make it a home run. Like, that's why.
He wasn't. He was kind of mad that it was a home run or something. Because, like, logistically within the game, like,
I don't know. But even
That also was not a home run pitch to hit. That was in the, like, down below his knees, and he just, like, swept it, you know?
And people forget, too, that A-Rod's 3,000th hit was also a home run.
Yeah.
It was, yeah. But I think it was also, like, so crazy that his last at-bat was a walk-off single, and it was his iconic single through the first and second base gap. Like, that was just, like, his iconic hit throughout his entire career, and just so happened to be the walk-off hit. Yeah. It's just, like, it's too perfect for you not to appreciate that.
Yeah, I know. All right, so that's our ode to Jeter, our childhood hero growing up. The next thing in other news recently, actually, the Astros owner said that the team is going to apologize in spring training. And I think, like, first of all, why even say this? Like, you guys, first of all, you should have apologized already. That Bregman shit was so fucking stupid. Like, him saying the commissioner made his report. I wish I had the sound queued up, but he said the commissioner. Everybody's seen it already. But, like, the way they're going about this is the worst possible way. Like, their PR guys are the worst ever. And well, he's just saying that they're going to announce their apology in spring training. Like, big fucking
whoop. Yeah.
You should have already.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about
that? And then they were like, then they're like, oh, yeah, it's not like we did it every game. I'm like, fuck off. Are you kidding me?
Every home game, every playoff game. You know, no big deal.
Yeah, they're like, it's like we did it all the time.
And you got that other shit. I don't have that queued up either. But when Altuve's basically giving the Astros versus the world mentality, like, he's making it like they're the victim. He's like, we're going to be in the World Series again next year. You can guarantee that. I don't know if he said guarantee, but he said we're going to be in the World Series next year. Like, fuck you.
I have some serious qualms with how the Astros are just dealing with everything that's happened in the last, like, 8 months, stemming all the way back to when their assistant GM made those really insensitive comments in the locker room about Ozuna. Like, they ended up canning him, but, like, at first, they were kind of defending him. Like, that was, I don't know. They just haven't been doing a lot right. When this comes out, you're supposed to, you know, release apologies and statements. And especially don't let Bregman go up and do what he did.
That was, like, the worst fucking way to go about this. You can't announce
when you're going to apologize. Like, that doesn't seem right to me. I don't know.
It just seems like it's forced. It seems like you're not genuine about it. Because you're saying, oh, we're gonna make our apology. Even when he was reading that report when he fired the GM and Hinch, he was reading off a paper. Like, you're like, it's like that thing where you're like, oh, what's my lawyer telling me what to say? Like, this is what I'm supposed to say. Like, it's just like, nothing is genuine. They're not sorry. They're just a bunch of fucking scumbags. And even you got Verlander now. This morning we saw it, or last night, and he's at the Baseball Writers Association dinner, and he cracked a joke. He said, it's been a blast to be a part of this organization. You know, as of right now, they're very technologically and analytically advanced. That's not going to go over well.
Don't fuck. Oh, my God.
Twitter's not going to have that.
Fuck you, Verlander. I actually didn't hear that yet.
At the meeting, this was like just now, but at the meeting too, or he was speaking at a dinner. And after he said that, everybody erupted in laughter, and he was like, oh, good one, well played. And then he waited for them to finish, and then he continued his speech. Like, that is not going to go over well.
I kind of think it's funny.
But you can't joke about it. It's funny, like that.
But that's just like, it's just way too soon. Like, why are you doing that? Especially come on, you should be better.
It's hard. If it was somebody other than Verlander, I'd probably be mad about it.
Because he's, dude, I mean, Verlander is the police of MLB Twitter. Like, yeah, and he hasn't said a word. Problems, he's got the burner accounts. That's probably Kate Upton. He's not, he's just silent. And then now he says this shit. So like, it's just fucking stupid to me. Right. I think he's a fucking scumbag. They're all scumbags.
Yeah. I mean, I think Bregman really pissed me off the most, though, when he was in his interview. Yeah.
It's Bregman and like, to the press. And that just
They're all pissing me off. Other than run support, like, didn't help. Like, it's not like they were doing, like, I don't know. They're just joking about it now, you know?
Verlander, it doesn't affect the pitchers, Verlander which is wasn't why, totally in the world. Yeah. Which well, why I'm not going to yell at Garrett Cole or something. Yeah. But
it's kind of weird that Cole isn't on that.
I mean, yeah.
But they're just all joking about it now, and they're just like it didn't even happen, and they're just like, yeah, it's over. We're gonna joke about it. You know, we're not really sorry, and it's just ridiculous.
I just think it's so funny that if this is the way they go about it this year, then they spin it as the Astros versus the world thing. I think that is the.
Oh my god!
I hate that. I hate them. I hate everything about them.
I'll buy right into the Astros versus the world. I'll be their number one.
But it literally is. Oh yeah, I'll be against them. But it is kind of all right. They deserve it, but it is Astros versus the world because everybody fucking hates them. For the first time in history of baseball, we're the second most hated team, and we're hated for a good reason.
Let's go.
We're hated for a good reason. They're hated for a bad reason. And
well, I disagree. I think we're hated for a bad reason. They're hated for a good reason. Like there's good reason to hate the Astros.
Oh no, but I'm saying like, I like that we're hated for that reason. Not right. It's a good reason to us. It's a bad reason. Not the right reasons, I'm saying. And
we're hated because we're good.
Yeah, they're going to hear it from every single team when they go to every single new city. They play every single game, every single post-game conference, every presser, everything. Every question is going to be about you cheating. And you better have a damn good apology that's going to be in spring training because otherwise, I mean, even if they do have a good apology, what are you going to say that is going to make these reporters not ask you questions about that?
So I think what makes this so much more like impactful and different than other scandals is that the players are so much more involved in the backlash and the hating of the Astros. You know, it's like when people got called for taking steroids, like all the other players in the MLB were silent. They were just like, yeah, it's a fucking happens, you know, we do that. But, like, now when everyone gets caught, when the Astros get caught doing the sign stealing with the technology, they're just like, whoa, 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 whoa. And now players getting behind it. And because the players are the ones speaking out about how frustrated and upset they are, it's like they're the ones that are really getting impacted by it. You know, they're the ones on the field. And because of that, I feel like it's just caused so much more of a uproar and all, like, a big, like, you know, hatred towards the Astros now.
Fuck the Astros. I don't care. I don't care.
I think what we need to do is, or I don't know when exactly our first game in Houston is, but we should just have Brett. No, I'm saying we should just have Brett stand in the corner of the locker room or in the corner of the dugout and just start wailing on the garbage can when they're pitching. Just to like get in their head.
Let's make that go viral.
Let Brett bang, but have him bang the garbage can.
Yeah.
Just to get. I don't know. Could you imagine being Verlander pitching and then just hear like three bangs?
I'd just be laughing. Be
so but he has to be like blatantly obvious in sight, yeah, like no, in the exactly. dugout.
That's
just what like
I mean, because otherwise, like, then it's like sketchy. But like, we make sure it's away because like, there's no way that you know we would have a camera in the Astros outfield. Like it'd be like a joke.
Just to I think fuck it'd with be them.
Funny. I it's like what they did in the playoffs with the pitch tipping. Like they were like pretending that they had the tip pitches, but we do it with Brett with the garbage can.
I want Brett to stand out there, make eye contact, point at them, and be like, and just start banging like crazy. I think that'd be the funniest thing in the world. That's enough. That's
alrighty then.
We're gonna keep doing that whenever we start rambling on about something, just to change topics.
That's our segment break.
That's our new segue. So in other news. Well, fuck the Astros, but MLB just Rob Manfred announced that the robo umps that we've all been hearing about are going to be put into place this spring training, and I don't like it. I don't like it at all. But so, and people who don't really know what they actually mean by robo umps, we wrote a blog post, or one of our writers, Matt Barletta, he said in his words, quote, because this is in the midst of one of the most controversial scandals in sports history, in the history of the game, because of the technology and stuff like that. So what does the MLB do in response to this? Adding more technology into the game, which very controversial to me. But so he explained how this is going to work, and it's not going to be a robot ump. There's still going to be an umpire back there, and they're going to be using an electronic strike zone. It's going to be used in the 2020 spring training games. He didn't go into much detail in the interview, but it's a system. If it's anything like what they used in the Atlantic League last year, what we can expect is a home plate umpire will wear an earpiece, which will receive a call for each pitch from a radar-powered system, and the umpire will then announce the call like he would normally, and there's going to be about a delay of about a second in between the pitch being caught and then the call being made. So you're still going to you're not going to have R2-D2 like behind the plate, but I don't really like this. I mean, they're going to be testing it out. They've been doing it in the Atlantic League, like we've said, and in all spring training games, we're going to see this firsthand because we're going to be at spring training. We're not really going to see anything though, because it's just a guy wearing an earpiece. So, what do you guys think about robo umps? I hope it doesn't happen.
Here's my quick thought: is that I think first of all, like I think we talked about this in a couple episodes before. It's that like when the like ESPN or you know Fox or whatever, they put the strike zone on the TV so everyone can see. That was such a terrible decision, because now everyone and their mother thinks that they're umpire and they all have their own opinion, and it like just gives them more reason to be pissed off, and it's just like I just hate that so much. I'm all for more accurate pitch calling. I think like if it I don't love it. I don't love how they're calling it robo umps or whatever. But I think that if it's more accurate and it helps the umpire make a decision on a close call, I think that I'm open to seeing how it can be beneficial. But with that being said, I think they need to get rid of the strike zone on TV if they're going to have that. Because if they have the actual strikes and balls being called and they're going to be more accurate to what people are seeing on TV, I think that's going to be even worse for the game. Well, so I think
that it's less of a factor if the strike zone's on the TV and we're getting perfect calls, because then they're going to be literally accurate. Like I think that's like it's worse off that we have that strike zone on the TV and then the strikes are actually based off of what the umpire thought, because then there's going to be a discrepancy there. But if the zone is there and there's a perfect robo ump behind the plate or whatever it is, I think that's less of a I have no qualms with that aspect of it. I have qualms with them having the robo umps, but I think in terms of that,
I'm really upset about the robo umps. I think it takes away certain skill sets for certain players, specifically pitchers and catchers, when it comes to pitching and catching. Like for example, framing is not going to be a factor at all anymore. Yeah. Not even in the slightest. And having a good catcher that can frame it up, like for example, Jorge was really good at that, and it's a skill set that's literally gone out the window. Don't have to worry about it anymore.
And catchers really like that. Take that skill set to the league. Yeah, and that's part of the reason they get there.
Exactly. And like that, it separates catchers like at the younger stages in spring training and even in college, stuff like that.
Framing
like,
is something that's a
really important thing.
Are you a good framer or not?
And it's gone.
Yeah.
And same with pitchers, just with their deceiving with deception on their pitches. You're fooling a batter, sure, but you're also kind of fooling an ump a little bit. Like if your cutter comes in backdoor and a good frame,
100%.
Like, could be outside, but it's a strike and it looks like a strike. Yeah. And it should be a strike. But then you're going to be losing a lot of like really good pitches that like paint the black, so to speak. Mm-hmm. A lot of the pitches that we say paint the black don't actually technically touch the black. It just looks like it touches the black because it's a really good pitch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
And that's a great point.
I really hate that's going to be gone. And I also watched some Atlantic League highlights, and like there were these curveballs that were balls. So if you have like this 12-6 kind of like Kershaw type curveball or like a Roy Oswalt type curveball, it could technically hit the front right corner bottom little end zone, because it's like a 3D thing. It's not like a box. It's like a full, you know, polygon or whatever. polygon. good vocab. But so like there was a ball that was literally in the dirt in the Atlantic League, and the guy got punched out on it because it was technically a strike.
What about the size of the strike zone? Like, how is that going to be changed based on the batter?
Well, that's the thing too, because the part that I like about regular umpires is that regular umpires have their own zone, and a part of the game as a pitcher and a batter is figuring out what their zone is that day, and it's a mental thing. It's a game within a game. It's literally them trying to figure out their zone. So that day, you play
to the ump.
Yeah, and that's why you have players asking them, like, the conversations after they get punched out on a bad pitch, like, where was that?
And
was
then that, you're, was you're, that low? Was that high? As a hitter, it's different. And then as a pitcher, it's different based on the umpire.
Yeah, and that, I think that part of the game, if this ends up being in MLB, it's just another thing that's eliminated. And it's the human element of the game is now eliminated, and that is a huge chess match of baseball. It's figuring out what yes, there's going to be blown calls, but we're also humans, and this is a part of the game. There are times where technology can come into play here, and I think, like, in tennis they have two of the science, like when the ball is in or out, and I think that's something with the foul balls or something that I'm fine with, because if something's foul or fair, like, it's hard for one of the field umps to catch the ball to see if it went fair or foul, if it's down to the millimeter like that. So I think that is something identical to what tennis does, because they zoom in and they show where the mark is, and if it's in or out, that's fine. That's good with me, because then you know what's fair or foul and everything like that. But in terms of that's an every pitch thing that is now taken away.
At all. I mean, in spring training, I won't care that much, but if this, like, becomes fully implemented in the MLB, I'm going to be really, really disappointed.
I think they did
the replays. When they started doing the replay, I was kind of upset about the replay, and then once they started doing the challenge, I got that. That was a little more like the fact that you can challenge a call and they don't review every single call. Yeah. I like that. I can live with that. I think they've implemented replay really well into the MLB in hindsight, but this is way too much.
I don't like how they're trying to change the game for the benefit of trying to, like, grow the game. I like growing the game in new countries, doing whatever the hell you're going to do, but if you're going to change the game to try and appeal to more people because it's too slow or whatever, like the new rule.
This is going
to
slow it down.
Yeah, but the new rule where they're implementing you have to face three batters and stuff like that.
What if it breaks? Like, what if it breaks? The game is going to stop?
Then the ump's got to actually call it.
What if the technology breaks?
It's just a phone call. It's like, he has an earpiece in.
I'm just saying, technology breaks. What, are they going to stop the game?
Yeah, what if he takes a foul ball off the AirPod? And it gets jammed in
his ear. He's got an AirPod.
I'm pretty sure that's actually what they use in the Atlantic League, though. Like, I'm pretty sure AirPods. They actually used AirPods. Yeah. I could be wrong, but I'm, like, fairly sure that
they're AirPod used. Pros.
Yeah. Like, what if the signal goes out? You know, like, shit happens.
Yeah, no, I think we're all in the same boat here. And the majority of people. But actually, I have seen that some of the players want robo-umps because of that reason, but I don't think they actually want it.
I'm sure they're not pitchers.
I don't think they are, but I mean...
Yeah, but also, I guess none of those players really know how it's going to go down yet, though. They're just saying they want it, but they haven't experienced it yet. So this will probably be that first taste of it.
But I have seen that people are literally saying that it's 50-50 split almost. I haven't put out a poll or anything, but, like, fans don't want to see it. Some players do, and that bothers me. I don't think they actually want it. I think they're just... In the moment when they get a bad call, they're fed up with it. Yeah. They're like, I want robo arms now, you know?
Yeah. And, I just want to know how it went over in the Atlantic League. I want to know what some of these players that played in the Atlantic League thought of it. I want to know what the managers thought of it. There are so many things that go into it. I can't imagine that it went over that well in the Atlantic League.
Well, and we'll find out now, because, I mean, the real players are going to be using this system in spring training. So, like, that's a good way to test it out, because it really doesn't matter that much. Yeah. But, you know, I don't know. I just really hope it doesn't happen. And that's all I have to say about that.
Alrighty then.
Next topic.
But if you want to go check out the whole story, we did write a whole blog about it. So, you know, go check it out on the website. If you want to read more.
Plug our blogs there. Thanks, Matt. But in other news, Hap was just named as the fifth starter by Brian Cashman. I mean, this is kind of something that we already knew was going to happen. It was either him. It was him or Montgomery, and then Domingo when he comes back. Whatever happens with him, but, like, you know, I mean, Hap is somebody that's been good. He's been really good. I don't want to say really good, but he's been consistent. Not in the playoffs, but, like, he was one of the more consistent pitchers last season. A lot of people overlook that.
Yeah.
And he's one of the, definitely one of the most underrated ones. He's a left-hander, which helps out the rotation. We got Cole's a righty. We got Seve's a righty. Then we got Paxton. Tanaka's a righty. Then we got Paxton and Happ now. So we kind of got a good split there.
It's a good split.
Yeah. So I don't know how much you guys care about that, but in my opinion, I thought this was expected. I don't know if you guys had any different opinions, whether like Montgomery or whatever, but...
Well, I just...
Go ahead, Murph.
I just want to know kind of how, like, set in stone this Happ fifth starter thing is, because we just realistically have no idea what Montgomery's capable of really now. He had a really good rookie year in 2017. He proved that he could pitch in the majors, really good, but he's been out... For a rookie, he had a
few better than Happ.
He's better than Happ.
Better than Happ.
And there, but granted, he missed a year, and like that's tough. So I think probably depending on his spring, he's probably going to start in AAA. But I don't know how long until he comes up. And then when he comes up, how do we go about it? There's talk of like a sixth starter, and then what happens when Herman comes back? I think that I like Happ as the fifth starter right now, because I think that we're going to try to deal him at the deadline, and I think he's going to be a piece that's going to fit well in a trade deal if he does well as the fifth starter. So if he finds himself like, you know, 6-3 in July, like he could get dealt.
Yeah.
And that, yeah, actually, I think that was exactly what I was going to say, Murph. I think literally word for word, that was exactly what I was going to say.
Sorry.
But I guess so only, only to add on to that. Yeah. I think like if there is a fifth starter, Happ is the clear, person for that. But like, how often is he really going to pitch? You know, like how many times is he really going to come up and start? I don't know. And also, it also again depends on how Montgomery looks. If he comes up, you know, dealing again, he's going to come up and probably take that spot away. Or maybe Happ goes to the bullpen again, or, you know, gets traded away. But yeah.
I mean, we're not getting to DMs right now, but we did get a, we'll use this one right now because it relates. One of the questions we got was, should the Yankees potentially use a 6-man rotation? That was from CJ Mencho. I don't know if he wants me to do his at, but whatever. But I initially, when I saw this, I didn't really buy into it at all, and nobody does that. So I was like, why would we do a 6-man rotation? But Murphy had a different take on that. So if you want to take that one.
I don't know necessarily. Let me preface this by saying I don't think that we're going to do a 6-man rotation. I don't see that happening at all. But to play devil's advocate a little bit and to kind of ponder it, there are some pros to it. I mean, you know how we struggled so much last year with injuries, and if you're giving people an extra day's rest, you know, you're going to prevent injuries. I just kind of think maybe some kind of hybrid six starter would work. Maybe, like, have Montgomery and Happ kind of go every other, and then if you know you're on that many more days' rest, you can maybe go into the eighth inning if you're pitching well and not worry as much about pitch counts, that kind of thing. So, like, there are some positives to it, but I don't know if it's going to really work.
I mean, I think six starters not going to happen.
That's never happened before.
Yeah, it's never
Never going to happen. Also, like, timing-wise, like, I don't think that's going to be relevant or even come up in the situation.
Even roster spot-wise, I don't think there's a spot for
him. I think we might see some certain teams maybe do that. Maybe
teams about,
that don't have an ace.
We do see the game changing a little bit with, like, the opener. So this isn't, like, entirely out of the question because it's kind of like running back by committee sort of thing. But, like, I don't like it for the reason that
it's because
we have prominent pitchers. Like, why are we pushing Garrett Cole back an extra day?
I knew you were going to mention that. I was waiting for you to say that.
Yeah.
Because like, that's the biggest negative, is that we're negating Cole. We're going to take away three or four Cole's
start. I want him every fucking third day. I want him every day. Like,
all right.
Yeah.
That doesn't matter.
But now, what about, like, I don't know what your guys' thoughts on this, but let me know. It's like, what about the whole bullpen days now? Like, we had so much success with that last year.
Yeah. I mean, we were talking to Scott about that, and he kind of brought to light something that I didn't even think about. Like, with the bullpen days and the success and that stat, you see that it's like, oh, we're 25-0 in bullpen days. But that, because that he was saying, like, that doesn't really tell the whole story because he only pitches an inning. So, like, he didn't do anything but the first inning. So, like, it's kind of,
that's how Herman got half his wins.
Yeah, exactly. Because he was the guy who piggybacked off him. But I don't really like, I mean, we don't need the bullpen day anymore. We use the bullpen day because out of need.
We were hurt. Everyone was hurt.
And who knows? Maybe we'll get injuries and that could happen. But I actually don't think it'll ever happen, even with injuries, because we have guys like, we're currently talking about adding a sixth starter. We're never going to need a bullpen day.
Realistically,
at face value,
chances are that somebody's going to get hurt. Montgomery's going to come up. Hap could be gone before Herman gets back. Like, you never really know. But all probably I do is, know yeah. is that if you include Devi Garcia into this, not as being like a seventh star, that's not what I mean. But in terms of who we have to come up if we find ourselves in rotation trouble injury-wise, we have Montgomery can come up. When Herman's back, we have Herman. And then MLB Pipeline has Devi Garcia at, what, 92? And his he's projected to come this year.
Is he? Because you saw it said 2020. ETAs.
And the ETA, it was, and same with Clark Schmidt, same thing. Both Clark Schmidt and Devi Garcia were projected to come up to the MLB in 2020. And then Jason Dominguez is 2024 because he doesn't even have his driver's license yet. But, like,
he's got to learn his permit.
They're guys that could come up. We might not need him to come up. We might not have a spot for him. Maybe they'll be up or down here or there out of the bullpen. But they could. If shit hits the fan.
I don't know a lot about Clark Schmidt. Do you know? What position is he?
He's a pitcher.
Oh, okay. He's a reliever? Or is he starter?
That I'm not 100%.
I don't really know. I mean, obviously, I know the big two are here with Devi Garcia and Dominguez, but yeah, we'll get into that later. But yeah, that's enough out of that. I mean, do you have anything? Yeah. Any of the closing comments there, Damon, about good old J Hap?
No, I was just gonna say that if everyone stays healthy, which I hope it does, like I don't think he's ever gonna pitch, but obviously.
Or Devi.
What? What do you say?
Who's never gonna pitch? J Hap or Devi?
I mean, Devi, but also, like, you know, I think that, yeah, I think if everyone stays healthy, which I hope they do, like, there's no need for a bullpen day or anything. And if, you know, obviously shit happens, but, you know.
Yeah. In other news.
Alrighty then.
That's getting a little annoying.
I feel like I'm going to do that a little too much. We might stop that bit.
Relax.
Yeah.
But in other news, a lot around the league right now is the Arenado talk. And, I mean, clearly there's outrage with him. Like, he does not want to be in Colorado. Because the GM literally said they were open to shopping him and everything like that. And he came out after that and said, I'm not quoting anything, but he said, although something along the lines of, if you want to trade me, then trade me. Like, he wants out.
And then I think I have the quote right here. It says, quote, there's a lot of disrespect from people there that I don't want to be a part of. And then he like said, you can quote me on that.
He said verbatim, like, you can quote me on that.
He said, you can quote me on that.
That's crazy.
I don't blame him for any of this.
I don't blame him at whatsoever.
He's in Colorado. I was surprised that he signed the extension in and of itself, but he's stuck in Colorado, who doesn't have even close to the pitching to make a playoff run.
Their pitching at least sucks.
Like, and it's always been that way. And, like, so I just don't see him having any success in Colorado. And he's at the point in his career where he can pretty much pick where he wants to go.
He's one of the best players in the baseball.
He might be the best infielder in baseball.
100%. I think that's true. I think he's top. I put him top five. I don't know where the rankings lie. But
yeah,
player in baseball.
I just think he's in a spot where he can do that and he should do that. Although I'm kind of upset that San Diego's in on it because – I don't know where they're getting this kind of cash flow or anything like that, but they just kind of have everyone. I guess they do have the prospects to deal and whatnot, but
they have a lot of prospects to the point where they can make a good package.
Do you think Tatis would be a part of that?
No, Tatis is untouchable.
I think so too.
I mean, see, the weird thing to me about and this applies to everything with the trade rumors, because there's obviously the Lindor and Mookie, and I don't know how those.
Yeah, Mookie is the other one they're in on.
Yeah, I don't know how much those are. If that's going to happen this year, if it's going to happen at all. But with the trade packages we've seen in the past, and I think I want to preface this by saying the Yankees are not going to be involved in a trade for Arenado. Like, we don't have
There's no point.
We don't have the need. We honestly don't even really have the prospects anymore. The one that we're willing to give up, because we're not going to give up Dominguez.
The only one we'd maybe.
We only have three in the top 100. So we're not going to.
We're set. I don't need anybody else. We're set.
All of our prospects are in the majors. We got Gleyber Torres, we got Miggy, all that stuff.
Or they're shipped. Sheffields exactly. Of the world.
For those of people that are trying to see if we can get Arenado, it's not going to happen. But things we've seen, I want to talk about just trades in general. We've seen that you don't really have to give up a lot for a trade, especially for a premier player like that. And that is in part due to the contract. And we've seen that with Stanton. Like, Stanton, we gave up a bag of balls for.
Yeah.
And we gave up Starlin Castro and then somebody, I don't even remember what the trade was, but that's due to the contract, because a lot of people don't want to take on the contract. And I think it's interesting to note, obviously, Stanton is, honestly, it's not even that different from Arenado. I think Stanton had more value because he came off an MVP year, the prior year. So I think you actually would give up less for Arenado than Stanton, because Stanton is coming off an enormous MVP year. 57 bombs.
Yeah.
Arenado is, yes, he's one of the most premier players in the league, but Stanton was literally the premier player the year that he was traded. Yes, the contract is a thing, but also Arenado just got an extension. So
but
his
what
contract
was Arenado's extension compared to Stanton is the only thing. Because if his contract's less, then they're probably going to
Well, Stanton was making how much per year?
He's making 324 over.
I think it's like $25 million a year.
Yeah.
So
Arenado's 260.
And how much is that per year?
Whatever 260 divided by 8 is. Come on, somebody. It's 32. It's 32.
He's making 32 and a half.
So
he's making more money than Stanton was per year. I don't know how, because it's obviously, it gets sometimes divvied up and more per in different years, whatever. But it's a very, the more I talk about it, the more it's like very much the same sort of thing. I think you don't have to give up much for him. So I don't know. I just think in terms of all these teams that are looking to get him, if he wants out, I really don't think you have to give up too much. I think like you give up a lot in terms of like signing a player because it costs a lot of money. But in terms of trades for current talent, yeah. I think people are prospect hugging a lot now. So it's just like,
I think it seems like the Rockies will be prospect hugging, but I also think they know what they have in Arenado and what his trade value is to a team, especially like the Padres. And I think whatever trade they make is going to be mutually beneficial. Sorry, you're distracting me.
Here's what I have to say about San Diego.
Go fuck yourself, San Diego.
Yeah, so as I was saying, going...
Before you were rudely interrupted by Ron Burgundy.
Yeah. I think it's going to be... the trades that we see, like the San ones... It doesn't seem like you're giving up a lot because we don't recognize the prospect's involved name right away necessarily, so we might not exactly know who it is. But I think that the Padres are going to be having to give up a lot of their premier prospects if they're trying to land an Arenado, and also probably going to have to give up a few picks.
Yeah,
it's like, and I feel like a lot of these teams are not even going to be like willing to do that for not in a win now mentality. You know, like why am I going to give up all my prospects for Nolan Arenado if not in a win now? Or next couple of years, you know.
See, the Rockies are such an anomaly to me, and I know why they're bad because their pitching is the worst in the league. But their offense is so fucking good. They have Trevor Story, who is literally probably one of the best shortstops behind Lindor in the league, unless proven otherwise. But and this Tatis and all that. But they have
Blackman.
Their offense is top five, and their pitching is top five worst. So like, that's why they're so bad.
It also makes sense. Like, they're not going to invest a lot of money in pitchers because, number one, they don't have the salary cap to invest a lot of money in anybody. And number two, like, investing in pitchers in Colorado is really counterproductive because, I mean, it sounds a little ridiculous, but the air's thin out there. Like, a pitcher's not going to, A, want to go there, and B, if they do go there, they're not going to thrive there. So they have it makes sense why their team's built and how it is and why they don't have the pitching. But when you're Arenado, you got to sit back eventually and realize, like,
And it sucks because, like, you know, like, Arenado wouldn't sign an 8-year, $260 million extension if he didn't want to be there for the long run.
Yeah. But then when
the year after, they're just trading him, you know, it's like, that sucks.
That's why, in his case, I'm with him because you just sign an extension. You want to be there, clearly. You sign an 8-year extension, whatever the fuck it is. And then you get rumors of trades, like, fuck you guys. I would want out too. And in his case, like, I mean, you got a guy, your offense is clearly there, but in terms of winning games, clearly I think they're below 500, and like the team as a whole, like, you got a package up, a bullpen, the starting rotation, all that stuff. They're nowhere near a place where they should have a guy like Arenado. Like, the trade makes sense in their perspective, you know what I mean? Like, you have such a top-tier talent, and why not, like, if you're in franchise mode or something, you break that talent up into more players. So Story's young too. Arenado's also young. But if you have a guy with that
28.
Much value, if you have a guy with that much value, I think as a franchise, it makes so much sense to get rid of him so you can get a big haul back right now. And, yeah, I mean, for the Rockies' sake, I'm just rationalizing why the trade could happen because it at first, with all these guys like Mookie and Lindor and Arenado, it seems kind of like a long shot. Like, oh, yeah, they'll get traded. but I feel like it actually is way more likely than we think. And this also doesn't have to happen in the offseason. It could happen at the trade deadline. And I've been in conversations with Matt where he was saying he thinks that you have more of a return as the selling team at the deadline. I don't really think that's the case for me because...
You're going to get more... If they trade Arenado at the deadline, they're going to get a lot more for them than if they trade him now.
Yeah, but
and I think that's what Matt's trying to say.
That does make sense. But my argument was that you're going to have less suitors because they're only going to be the ones that are in the playoff race. You know what I mean?
Right, but those are the ones who A, want him anyway. The Padres and the Red Sox who are trying to get back into a contender.
Yeah,
and then when if they're being a contender at the deadline and like they're say the Red Sox are second in the AL, and they're like.
They're going to keep Mookie, obviously.
They're going to keep Mookie. But if they're sitting at the bottom of the AL and then the Padres are up at second in the West, they're going to deal Mookie. And I don't want them to deal Mookie.
as much as I want the Red Sox to be
bad. I don't want the Red Sox to have all the Padres prospects.
That too. But as much as I want the Red Sox to be bad, I like having them be a little bit good. Like so.
I love when the Red Sox are second in the AL.
Baseball's better. Yeah, when they're second nothing in the better. AL. Yeah. No, but like baseball's so much better when they're good and the rivalry is big. Like, and they'll still be good this year. We're all making fun of them being like, the Red Sox suck. They're in a little bit of a turmoil with Cora, but like they're still going to be good.
They had a rough year, but they have a
good
roster.
I think they're going to be right there with the Rays. The Rays are going to be very good.
If this kid that's coming up is going to be that, yeah.
Yeah, well, that kid too.
They got the number one pipeline prospect.
Yeah, I think that's enough of. Talking about other teams, we keep going on a tangent.
I mean, it's around the league.
It's all relevant.
So, Murph actually was saying something about the reason why we got Cole and how Pettit was a huge
part of that. So there was a New York Post article that I read yesterday, just referring to Andy Pettit and how we all knew that he was like a part of getting Gerrit Cole, but there was. He was kind of just brought on to get Gerrit Cole. Like he was Gerrit Cole's favorite player growing up, and he was a Yankees fan and all that. And just at the bottom of the article, Pettit kind of said how he pitched Gerrit Cole. And he said, if you want to win championships now, New York's the spot for you. And that, I think, and what the article implied is that kind of sealed the deal. And if we didn't have Pettit in our corner while trying to get Cole, we might not have gotten him. We might have lost out on him.
Yeah, and we even looked like he wasn't even a part of the organization. He just...
He's definitely like a special assistant or something, but like he doesn't have like a front office gig as far as I know. Like he's
a silent guardian.
Yeah, he was like a...
I mean, it worked.
He was like a gun for hire on getting...
Yeah, that was sick. Gerrit Cole. I mean, if you're him though, and your favorite player growing up was Andy Pettit, like even when he's the kid in the outfield with that sign, his favorite player growing up was Andy Pettit.
If A-Rod walked in the door and said, you should sign with the Yankees, he'd be like, okay,
thanks, A-Rod. And then, but like you walk into the room not expecting Andy Pettit, and then all of a sudden you walk in there and your childhood hero is right there. Yeah. That carries some weight. Like he's an old man, like not an old man, he's an adult now. And I think that's still, like, I would still be starstruck. We're getting starstruck over Jason Dominguez, 16. I'm 22, so.
Speak for yourself.
I mean, you also are. Don't act like that. But, yeah, I thought that was cool that the Yankees went out and did that.
Yeah, and it's a lot more impactful, I think, sure.
In other news with, I know we talked about this with Keith when he was on the podcast, but with Miggy. It's interesting to see where they're trying to, we talked about before how him potentially being an outfielder, but I just think I didn't initially agree with that. I just didn't see Miggy out there. He's an athlete, so he can probably try it. But people are talking about the first base thing. People are just, and I agree with all this because it's just figuring out new ways to get Miggy in the lineup somehow, get his bat in there. Yeah. Whether and that's not just being a DH because obviously he'll DH also. But that's a bat. Like he's got a bat, and the more ways you can try and get his bat in the lineup, whether that be because it's a 162 game season, so there's gonna be people who get hurt one, who you rotate around, who some guy plays first one day, give other guys rest, who are the everyday starters. you're going to have moving parts. Last year, because of injuries, but also because it's baseball, we didn't have the same lineup every single day. Like, there's a new guy, new lineup literally.
We hardly had the same lineup twice the whole year.
All year. Mm-hmm. Like, whether that be fucking Tyro Estrada and, like, Breivik Valera, all these guys. But that's still going to be the case this year because the lineups change every day, and I think it's a good idea, and I'm starting to buy into it more, and I, this conversation begins because Boone actually said that in spring training, Miggy is going to be playing outfield and trying out new positions like second and first and stuff like that just to see if he can do it. I love it. Mm-hmm. I mean, we'll see if it works.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that, you know, Cashman said that third base is our shallow spot to lose.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think it's so true. He's definitely earned that right. And the fact that they are trying to figure out and, you know, have Miggy play in a couple different positions just proves that they want him around. They want to keep him around. They want him in the lineup somehow. But, you know, obviously third base is a lot preoccupied with Gio.
Yeah, I think there are two ways to look at this, and I kind of can't really decide what team I'm on. The first way is kind of what Rella said, that his bat needs to be in the lineup every day and, you know, test him out at first and test him out in left as a gives us kind of, you know, options as to where to, how to plug him into the lineup and stuff like that. And then the other side is that, you know, spring training is a full month where you just kind of lock in and work out your kinks.
Training.
He's got a lot of kinks at third base that if you're putting him at first and you're putting him in left, you're taking away from kind of developing his fielding at third, which is almost going to kind of leave him on an island where he's not going to have a position where he's comfortable. And then he's going to have to DH. And then that way you're almost limiting him. So, you know, I don't know. It's tricky. He's going to have to put in a lot of work in spring training regardless, though, I think.
Yeah. But I'm so excited to see what it is, though, because, yeah, like, I'm excited to see him play different positions and see if it's possible.
He's been posting, you know, videos and stuff like that. He's been grinding all offseason anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I believe it.
I don't really buy into those videos as much. They look like routine plays. But yeah,
you know he's working.
I mean, yeah,
it's effort. He's showing effort
anyway. Like, he's not. He wasn't. He was always doing that. But I mean, yeah. I just like the idea that, like, the flexibility there. Like, you're so good at hitting that. Yeah, maybe we could try. Yeah, I mean, if they're literally like we said before, if they're throwing Clint out there in left field, fuck it.
he can't play one position yet. So, you know.
I mean, yeah, Miggy. And I mean, granted, he's a young player too, and Clint could get better also. So we never know about that. He doesn't look like he's shows any signs of being better. But regardless, I think I love the idea of trying Miggy out in any position that works. I mean, yep, guys like Tyler Wade who play a lot of positions, outfield, infield. We've seen it happen before. So
not everybody's.
Yeah, he can't hit for shit though.
Not everybody's Tyler Wade though. So I just love the idea. I think we. I think. So that wraps it up for me with the art with our topic. So we asked for your DMs.
Let's get into the DMs. You guys
answered, so let's get into those. Our first DM comes to us from Stephen Leonardi. He's a new writer, actually, so shout out to him. He said, we would love to hear you guys discuss which of the more role type players you think will be an unsung hero this year, that being including guys like the Fords, Wade, Frazier, Higgy, Talkman, etc. What do you guys think?
So I am obviously big Tyler Wade fanboy. I'd love to see him, you know, come up and be that guy and stay up and get at bats and stuff. But realistically, I think he's going to have a difficulty finding his way into the lineup. So I'm going to go with Mike Ford. I think he and Voit are going to be in this kind of, this competition for first base and for at-bats and for innings and stuff like that. And I think they're both going to mutually benefit from that. And I think Ford's going to step up and maybe start to slide into a DH role or be in a pinch hit role because he's a lefty, that kind of thing. I think he's going to be really useful.
Yeah. My personal one, and on this list, he mentioned Talkman. I think Talkman's not an unsung hero role type player. I think Talkman's going to be arguably possibly the starting center fielder, left fielder. I think the center field job could be his, and I think he's just going to have a huge role. So that's my answer, but I'm not going to use that because he's not a role player to me. I think the biggest role player that I think is going to have an impact this year is going to be Higashioka, because Higgy, we've seen Gary gets hurt a lot. So with that being said, Higgy being the backup, we saw last year that Romine had an enormous impact on the team. Like, Romine was one of our most consistent guys. Whenever his number was called, he just answered the call. Like, he would hit walk-off home runs. He would hit walk-off singles. He would get a hit when it mattered. He was batting like 300 at some point. I think that with him leaving, obviously he's on the Tigers now, and good for him too because he gets a contract. But with him leaving, I think that, and the durability that we've seen of Gary, he's not going to get 162 games. So with that being said, Higgy's going to get a lot of time at catcher. And I think Higgy is one of those guys who's just like, he's shown that he can do it. Like, he's always, last year there was that stat also that he was lumped in with Romine, and they were talking about who, like, them together, them, their combined stats, they would always do so well. So, like, Higgy to me is, and this is leads into why they got rid of Romine, or why they felt comfortable doing it, because they would have had to pay him like a starting catcher salary, which is what he got on the Tigers. And he's just like an itch that they want to scratch. Like, we want to figure out if Higgy can be that Romine guy. He's a young guy. I don't really know exactly how old he is, but I know he's not old, and Romine's a little older. So that's in long my pick. I think Higgy gets a lot of reps because Gary is not very durable at all. As much as we love Gary, and Gary looks fucking slim as ever right now. You guys
he looks fantastic.
He looks great. So maybe that plays into his durability, but I mean, nobody plays the whole season. That rarely ever happens, especially a catcher. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that they go through so much the day in, day out, whether it's even bullpen sessions, too. They're catching people. It's just I think Higgy. Yeah, that's my answer.
Yeah. Long way. I think, first of all, big shout out to Romine, because I fucking love Romine so much. Man, he was so good. He was like the perfect backup catcher, and always got the job done.
Textbook, couldn't ask for better.
Like, couldn't ask for a better backup catcher. I don't know. I still feel like Talkman is still going to play into that role player position.
I agree.
Because, like, dude, I mean, like, here's the thing. It's like, I know he had a couple good games. He went off for a month. I'm not saying two games. I'm saying, like, you know, he didn't play. There's not enough, like, oh my God, I'm going to quote Murphy or sample size.
Nah, let's go.
But, like, I don't know. Like, he played for, like, when he first started, he wasn't that good, right? And then he picked up and got fucking crazy in the last, like, month or so, and then got hurt. It's like, you know, I still feel like he's not going to be, you know, that everyday starter yet.
I think he is.
I think, but I'm totally confident with putting him out there any day.
His glove is unbelievable. His defensive run
that's
save.
That's why I think he's so confident.
His defensive run save, defensive war, and he didn't play nearly as many games as everybody else, but he was on the top of the league.
Yeah. I'm with Damon, though. I think if, you know, if we're healthy across the board, I think Talkman works his way in kind of at different spots in the outfield, and I think he's going to get a lot of at-bats, but I think I still would call him a role player utility guy. I agree that he is a utility guy, and I think he's going to be a big, big, big piece. And the second somebody goes down in the outfield, he's going to be in,
I think this is the thing, though. I think he's immediately put in that starter role because of, like, Hicks is out. You got who's the starting lineup? Let's name it right now. Judge is in right, obviously.
Yeah.
Then what? Gardner where?
Probably center. In center.
Left or center?
Sorry,
left or
left, center. Left.
And then who else is there?
Well, that and if, as long as Stan's DHing, then he's not. It's hard because we're not going to know. And the lineup's going to change because some days Andahar's going to DH, and then Stanton's going
to
be in left.
Goes
maybe
back to what
he's
I said.
Left. Like, you never really know, you know? So I think that's what I'm saying, though, is that he's not an everyday starter. Like, no one's ever – Judge is never going to come out of right field. LeMahieu's never going to stop playing short. Glaber's never going to stop playing short. Like, those are, like, the starters, and I don't think Talkman's one of those. I think Talkman's going to move around. I think he's going to play some center. I think he's going to play some left. Maybe DHs one day.
But I think he's going to be in the lineup every day. So, in terms of these role players, I think there's definitely levels to what these – on this list. Like, the Ford, Wade, Frazier, Higgy, Talkman.
I think he could play
in terms
as much
of playing
as Ford
time,
does.
Like, I think he plays nearly every game that he can.
Yeah, but think about that. That's the role, though. The definition of a role player is coming in to fulfill a role that's empty at that certain time. When everyone was hurt, he filled a role and came in and played left field.
Gio could also turn into a role player if Andahar wins third.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these positions with us, and that's the great part about the injuries last year, that's the silver lining here, is that we created so much depth that every position is kind of like a revolving door. Yeah. Like, every position has a battle, so it seems. First base with Voit and Ford and possibly Miggy and DJ and all the revolving door there.
Yeah, DJ can play there.
Yeah, exactly.
Gio could play, probably play third.
I mean, first base is a fairly easy position to play, but I'm not speaking from I don't know. But regardless, even third base has a revolving door with Gio and Miggy, and then shortstop, Glaber is going to play short, but then DJ is going to play
Glaber
short.
Glaber also
probably
came up a third baseman. Not that that would ever happen now, but
regardless, but infielders can tend to move around a lot. I mean, and then now you're seeing the left field is going to be, or I mean, the outfield as a whole is going to be a huge revolving door, because you got the only person who's slated, like we said, to play is Judge and probably Gardner. I mean, Gardner's earned that right.
Well, Hicks, sure. No, it's
Hicks when he comes back.
But they're going to, I'm saying that like they're going to move around. Gardner can't be an everyday center fielder.
No, he's going to
be an everyday player. He could be an everyday player. He's going to, I don't know. Like, he's going to play some left. He's going to play some center.
His arm sucks.
When Hicks comes back, Hicks is going to be the center fielder.
Yeah.
But, like, for right now, going into day one of the regular season, Judge is the only immovable object in right field. Like, he's the only one that you can't pull out of the outfield and put somebody else there.
Yeah. And, like we said, with Stanton, too, I personally, I mean, when Stanton was on the Marlins, fully healthy, he played every day left field.
Yeah.
Or whatever position he played. But he was an outfielder. He's not a bad outfielder.
Yeah,
he's
Stanton will play whenever.
He's got a cannon for an arm. He's an athlete for sure. If he's healthy, I think he's, I don't, a lot of people say like, oh, he's a DH. We got so many other players that are DHs.
Yeah.
He is the least of our worries in terms of the DHs. Mm-hmm. You got, I mean, to list all of our DHs. Last year we had more with Edwin, but also that now that Edwin's gone, but you still got
Voit,
guys like
Mike Ford.
Voit, Ford, DHs, whoever isn't playing could be the DH. Mm-hmm. And then you got guys like Frazier, who is a DH, his bat. I like his, everybody loves his bat. He can hit the ball.
Miggy.
I want him to play some DH. I want Miggy to play DH. I mean, obviously some guys are going to get days off, so everybody's a DH. So, I mean, that to me, like,
it's scary.
I'm just saying that guys who can play their position, like Stanton, are going to play their position. And for those that are saying, like, Stanton is our DH, like, fuck off. Like, he's an athlete.
We're going to see a converse of what last year was. Last year, we had a different lineup every day because a different guy was getting hurt every day. And barring any injuries this year, we're still going to get a different lineup every day because we're going to have a different DH every day. We're going to have this guy here. Like, you can move guys around, especially in the outfield. And I think we're going to fully utilize the DH. I wouldn't want us to have one DH every day.
Yeah, and that's literally the silver lining between all these injuries. And I was saying that last year. I was like, this is going to be good. Not even for this year, but for when they all come back. Now we have so many deep pieces that can get their number called and do what they had to do, like Romine and shit like that. So I just love it. And yeah, that's all I have to say about that.
Damon.
Anything else, Damon, on that?
No, I think we kind of touched on it all for sure.
Next question from Matt Reichel. I think that's how you say it. I'm going to butcher all these names when we get the DMs, but he said, what are your expectations for Cole in his first season as a Yankee? Everything?
Cy Young, Triple Crown, MVP,
triple
World
crown.
Series. Keeping it low.
Is he going to hit, too? I mean, I mean, realistic expectations. Like, obviously, I think he – didn't he break the record for K's last year with 300-something? I think – I mean, why? I don't know why he should regress.
I mean, you can't expect a guy to break a record, a strikeout record, necessarily. That's because the whole basis behind breaking a record is you exceed expectations. So
yeah.
I'd like to say my only expectation is that he stays healthy. That's the only expectation. I think if we can expect him to stay healthy, then he'll be worth every penny that we're paying.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if that guy stays healthy, I don't see him putting – I mean, maybe he could. He could get better. Who knows? Which would be crazy. That's asking for a lot. But, I mean, he did just have this fantastic season last year. And he didn't even win Cy Young, so maybe Cy Young is a answer that
it's
we could
hard,
put here.
It's going to be really hard as a pitcher to walk in, have your first year in New York, and
some guys can
Cy
do
Young.
It well, though.
Some guys can.
I don't know.
That was going to be my point. I think that, like, he does have to – there is a transitional period of, like, learning how to pitch in New York and a different stadium, too. It's not just like the atmosphere, it's the actual stadium itself, you know. It's a different stadium, the short porch, and
like,
you know.
It's not like he didn't deal with it's not like he's coming from the Rays, like where he didn't deal with anything before. Like, he came from the Astros. They fill out the stadium. They've been in playoff games.
Yeah,
they've
but
been...
even Greinke pitched with the Astros, and he hates pitching under pressure. Like, he could Greinke.
Yeah, well, he's
never
a
pitched in New York.
He's a little bitch.
He actually didn't even play that well. He walked in runs against us in the playoffs. So I think
in the playoffs.
A guy like Cole, who was so dominant in Houston in playoff games and stuff like that, like he was great. So I think that is a telltale sign that what we can expect from him coming to the Yankees a little bit at least.
It's tough to win Cy Young's as a Yankee because we got the short porch. You know, it's incredibly intimidating to pitch at Yankee Stadium. I'm assuming,
but at the same time though, he's gonna. I know the wins stat is really diluted in terms of the Cy Young vote, but he's gonna get wins. I mean, you see those stats with DeGrom. It's like if DeGrom were to get 3 runs of run support, he'd be 30-0. So
yeah, and that's crazy. I think that was gonna be my expectation or prediction. It's like, I don't really care about strikeouts, really. It's like, I care about wins, you know? I think that my expectation, like, I'd be happy. I mean, I'd be happy if he does anything, but I'd be really happy if he does 20-plus wins. That'd be fucking awesome.
I think that's going to be really easy. Cool. He got 20, he went 20-5 last year, right? If I'm not
mistaken. Yeah, and then around 15-5 the year before that.
15-5 the year before that, and now he's joining one of the most, if not the most, potent offense you can compare us with.
Yeah.
The Twins are right there with us in terms of offensive potential. But I feel like with that backing, I don't know. I don't know how else he's going to put up the same win numbers. But that, again, is diluted. So I think my expectation for Cole is more of the same, I think. And I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, I wouldn't...
Keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah. I wouldn't be really upset if he regresses a little bit. Maybe... half a run bump in his ERA, even out like that. That's actually a lot.
Yeah,
I wouldn't be that upset because it's New York and he'll settle in and that kind of thing.
Especially going to what we had before, what our best ERA was just under 4.
Yeah.
So if you get a guy, what was his ERA last season? 2.5.
I don't know.
2.5. Yeah.
It was in the twos. And credit to me.
Year before that, it was 2.88.
Yeah, I mean that's clearly what the guy brings to the table, and yeah, if he's a half a run bump and he gets a 3. I'd like it to be 2.99, but just like sub 3 ERA around there, I'm so happy with that.
Yeah.
And that's the guy we paid for, and that's an entire digit below what we had last year as the best ERA.
Yeah.
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 And so, ERA is really the most important thing because, you know, you can't, again, going by the whole DeGrom thing, you can't blame him if we're not producing runs, but obviously that's not going to be an issue.
Yeah. So the next question comes from Michael Reynoso, and he said, what do you think of the Yankee prospects in the newly released top 100 pipeline and where they ranked? Yeah, Jason Dominguez at 54, stud. You got Devi Garcia at 92, and you got Clark Schmidt at 88. I don't know why that was out of order, but what do you guys think?
I think the fact that Jason Dominguez is so high speaks so highly of how he's going to be, because you don't see a lot of guys that are 4 years out that are almost top
16 15. Years old.
16. Yeah,
literally just got his learner's permit.
Like, I wouldn't be surprised if that's the youngest anybody's ever done that. Like, I'm surprised. Yeah. I don't know. He's high. He's high.
Yeah.
And he's gonna be a number one prospect, and we all know that. So I'm interested to see how he does. He's expected to come up in 2024, which I can't wait that long. I might have to go either. Watch him play with like Staten Island or like Trent Thunder or something. Like, So. That's going to be really, really fun to see. And then as far as Schmidt and Garcia, we need pitchers to come up, and they're looking pretty ready to come up. And I like that they're still in the top 100.
So what was the ETA on Garcia and Schmidt that you saw?
The MLB.
Yeah, this year, right?
This year, 2020.
Because where was that from? Like, what
it was
source?
From MLB.com.
MLB.com,
like,
that's
like, it was in the pipeline, and then next to everyone's names on the pipeline, it says their expected year of arrival, estimated year
of
arrival.
That's so cool. I mean, I could see it, because we got in that sixth starter conversation, and even guys, like, you never know, like, we might use Devi as a bullpen guy, possibly. You never, like, you don't know your specific role. You can fix him around. I mean, Sevy was turned into a bullpen, and then he came back to being a starter.
That was actually going to be my point for both of them, is that a lot of people don't remember, but Sevy came up when he was like 22 got shelled. And everyone's like, oh, this guy's a bum. He's a waste. He went down. He came back up the next year
as a bullpen
and then was sick. And then the same thing happened a couple years ago with Herman.
Herman
came up for a little while, and we were like, oh, this guy's a bum. He sucked, like, why is he pitching? And then the next year he comes up, he gets 17 wins. So, like, I think he's going to have both of them, maybe, are going to have one of those years where they're going to come up, we're going to be a little disappointed, they're going to go back down, and then
everyone's going to overreact. Yankees Twitter is going to blow up, be like, oh, what? We should have traded him at the deadline and got the World Series. I mean,
2021, I think we're going to be good.
2021, that's fine with me. And then that also ties into the conversation too, that because this year Paxton and Tanaka are both eligible for free agency, so that might allow us, because those two guys are going to ask for a lot of money. And to be honest, I don't see us signing both. I know that's far out of sight right now. Like, it's not necessarily like a today problem, but they're very similar people. And if I had to pick one of those, I'd pick probably Paxton if I had a gun to my head.
We'll get there.
Depending on the season. I don't know.
We'll talk about
depending. This season's going to be the deciding factor.
Exactly. We'll see how they do this season. And but I just think one of the we're not going to keep both probably, and that's because of the security blanket in Schmidt and Garcia. And honestly, we haven't heard much about Schmidt as being the hype guy. We heard more about Garcia.
He got drafted out of South Carolina. It's just funny. So he was a college guy.
Yeah, it's just funny to see that he's higher than Devy. So
yeah, I was surprised.
That's
by
exciting
that.
To see that, because that's the security blanket coming up, and when we have this decision with Tanaka and Paxton, like, it's gonna be kind of made for us. We can let one walk and be okay with that, because then we have bolstering the bullpen or the rotation is we have Garrett Cole under contract for a while, then we have obviously Severino and then Paxton or Tanaka, and then maybe all those guys, you know, it's we have a good future for the pitching.
The other thing I was surprised about with that list, I won't say surprised because I'm not surprised, but it was Florio didn't make it and he dropped out because he's been in the top 100s and he hasn't come up. But granted, he was hurt all last year and that might have hurt his stock a little bit. But he's a guy when I think we get around the time of the trade deadline that's going to be in some of these trade packages now. Him and Hap could see a decent return on them. I would not like to see Devy or Clark Schmidt thrown into any of those trade packages, though.
Yeah, no. I like them for the future of the Yankees. And honestly, to go back to what the question was, for me, seeing Jason Dominguez so high, I know you talked about it already, but seeing him so high is so exciting to me because obviously there's the hype around him, and we see him. He's a switch-hitting, five-tool player who has a cannon for an arm and apparently is, like, fast. Like, apparently he's, like, very, like, unworldly fast, too, which is crazy for us, for a guy like that. He's building a brick shit house. We've talked about that before. Yeah. And he's only going to get bigger because he's in professional weight training now. But seeing him actually materialize as being 54 when he's 16.
And he's already a five-tool player,
by
too.
By the time
they're making him out to do that.
By the time the ETA comes around, I wouldn't put it past him.
I'm going to take a peek at that same thing and see if there's anybody else even close to him that's in the top
at that age group.
Yeah. And there was also he has the highest power rating out of his Asian prospect class.
Really?
Yeah. I don't really get the whole scout ratings and stuff like that because he's got like 60 or 70.
It was 65. It was 65, I think.
A couple guys are 2022. A couple guys are 2021, like Franco, the guy on the Rays, 2021. So far, you guys can keep talking. I'm just going through. But so far, Dominguez, I haven't seen a single 2023 and not another 2024. So he's in kind of his own class right now.
Yeah. I mean,
which is awesome.
I mean, it's just out of him, that's good to see. Our next question, I think this is going to be our last question. Mason Mastere. Oh, these names are getting hard. This isn't even my fault. But he said...
Nicknames from now on.
Nickname. Big Mace. So Big Mace asked us our opening day lineup predictions. I think we talked about that a lot. But what do you guys think? I think more the way we'll attack this question is obviously you have the guys like Judge who are going to be in right field. You got DJ at second. I don't know if he's asking for the lineup, like batting-wise, 1 through 9, which I don't... That's... Kind of
just two field positions.
Yeah, but in terms of field positions and who's going to be playing, I think the fringe positions is what we should be talking about because obviously we know who, like the position battle. So what do you guys think about that? So let's go around the diamond.
Let's go position by position.
Position by position, first base.
First base.
Who you got? I got Voit, but I think it's closer than people think.
For the sake of the argument, I'm going to take Ford. I think Voit, I've been seeing Voit, another guy in the weight room, all winter long, and I think it's going to be, like you said, really, really close between the two of them. I think they're kind of going to maybe not split time, but have some, you know, shared shared games, stuff like that. Maybe split a series here and there. So
yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead, Murph.
No, that was it. I really don't know, truthfully, on that one.
Yeah, I think that I'm going with Ford, just because I think he's gonna have a better spring training than Voit.
I could agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these are gonna come down to spring training, obviously.
Yeah, I just think that Voit's gonna perform. Ford's gonna perform a lot better than Voit in spring training.
Yeah,
and he's gonna earn that spot.
I just hope that competition does what I think it's gonna do and just brings out the best in both of them.
I think that's something we haven't had in a while too. Because even at third, all these competitions are gonna bring out the best in every player. Because before, all right, so we are obviously ranked minus like 200 to win our division, and then we're plus 250 to win the whole goddamn thing, which is insane.
Really well.
That's I want to look up if that's we'll look about off the air if that's the highest ever to be a favorite, because that's a line like it should be for a single game. But regardless, I just think that since we're so favorited, it's almost as if these guys kind of like they could like relax a little because they're such favorites. No. I'm saying they're not going to do that because like there's internal competition, so they're not going to be as focused on the rest of the league. Like they're going to be in a league of their own because these guys want to play on that team that is winning so much. Right. So instead, like if we're 30 games up on the division, which isn't going to happen because the Rays are good, but if we're so much further ahead in the win column than other teams, I don't think that actually will do as much as we thought it would because these guys are going to be fighting and clawing to play, you know?
Right. Well, while we're talking about these competitions, let's jump over to the other side of the diamond and talk about Urshela and Miggy.
I mean,
yeah.
For me, I mean, like Damon said Cashman said that it's Urshela's job to lose, and rightfully so, because he definitely earned that last year, and Miggy in his first year defensively wasn't really there, so that gave us as Yankee fans excitement to see somebody who actually can play the third bag and play really well, and there's no denying that. We've talked about this so much too about this is one of the main conversations of the offseason, and there's no denying Miggy's bat. Miggy can definitely rake. He batted bat 300, and Dan on the last podcast was saying it's actually not as good as you think it would be because his OPS or his OBP isn't really there because he doesn't really walk. So getting on, he doesn't really get on a high clip. Maybe that comes with discipline of him being an older player. So at the end of the day, there's no denying his bat, and like we said before, I think this ties into the whole competition and or spreading him around the field. But for the sake of saying who is our third baseman, I think it has to be Gio in opening day at least. But that is the question's opening day lineup predictions, so not what's going to be later on. So, yeah, my answer is most Gio.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Gio too. I think regardless of what happens in spring training, I think it's going to be Gio at third base on opening day.
For defensive reasons, yeah. I think that is the answer. Like,
I could agree with him being opening day because that's what Cashman said. But I think that, and I've said this before, and I know a lot of other people have too, is that we just forget about how good Andujar is because he struggled last year. And I just, if he's not back in the lineup.
Well, that's why I really think that, I think that depending on how spring training goes with Andujar, I think he might be the opening day DH if he's healthy ready to go.
Yeah.
And then it wouldn't hurt us to throw Stanton.
Stanton left.
Yeah. And I think that the only other questionable things in this conversation, I mean, obviously Garrett Cole's going to be pitching. Gary's going to be catching. Glaber's going to be playing short. DJ's playing second.
Judge is in right.
And then everything else we said about Talkman and Gardner are going to be the other ones.
Yeah. I think Gardner will be center, and then Stanton left, Miggy DH.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think actually we're all on agreement. So it's literally go around the diamond. So we're going to have Gary catching, Garrett Cole pitching. First base is Voit. Second base is DJ. Shortstop is Glaber. Third base is Gio. Left field is Talkman. Center field is Gardner. Right field is Judge. And DHing is Miggy. And I think there's no other way to go about it.
I agree with that. Yeah,
except for left and first, but yeah.
What do you mean?
I said Stanton and left, and then
Ford at first. Yeah, I think it's going to be Stanton and left. I agree with you, Damon.
I said Stanton and left. Oh,
no, you said Talkman.
Then honestly, then I meant to say Stanton and left and Talkman in center.
Just to, peruse, I don't know. What are the odds that we maybe see Talkman in center? In the
I think Talkman's our best center, best outfielder. That Judge is our best outfielder. I think Talkman's our second best.
He's also coming off injury.
Talkman is our second best outfielder, depending on barring injury. But he's
well, it's just Talkman opening day. It's a big factor.
Talkman in center.
If he's healthy, I think I would like to see Talkman in center.
I'd be surprised to see him, but I wouldn't hate it.
Yeah. All right. I think that wraps it up for me. Anything else from you guys? It's a long one.
No, it's about
hour 30.
Yeah.
Right. Let's go Yanks.
So as always, let's go Yanks. New episodes coming out every Monday in the off season. During the season, we'll be a lot more consistent, making we'll a ton of episodes. But yeah, that's it from us. Go Yanks.
Go Yanks.